I want to talk today about a officer-involved shooting that occurred on December 11th, going into December 12th of 2018. Before I do that, I'll just remind everyone of the governor's executive order that he signed on July 8th of 2015. The governor's executive order stated that the Attorney General of the state of New York has exclusive jurisdiction over incidents that involve the death of an unarmed civilian that were caused by law enforcement officials. In this case, the Attorney General was notified immediately after it happened. They reviewed the matter initially and came to the conclusion within 24 hours that the individual was in fact armed, not unarmed, and therefore that they would not be exerting jurisdiction over this matter. And therefore, when a case like this, if the Attorney General passes on it, then it naturally comes back to me. So I then initiated an investigation starting right away there on December 12th of 2018. I put the head of my homicide bureau, Colleen Curtin Gable, on the investigation, and we conducted a over 3 month investigation, and we have finalized that at this time. I will make a note here that we spoke with the family of the deceased this morning. The deceased has a father who is living down in Florida. He is represented by a good friend of mine, Attorney Don Thompson, who I have invited to actually be in the a briefing here this afternoon. I worked with Mr. Thompson on the Valentino Dixon matter. I admire and respect him, and that is why I have let him come and watch this briefing. But in any event, I met with my first deputy, and Colleen met with Mr. Thompson this morning. We put the deceased father from Florida on the speakerphone, and we let them know the results of our investigation first before we made it public. The deceased also has an aunt and uncle who live in the Niagara Falls area. We reached out to them and asked and invited them to be at this morning's meeting as well. They said thank you to us, but declined to be at the meeting here. All right, so those are all the preliminary matters here. Let's get in the facts here. We have, as I said, a situation that took place at about 11:40 p.m. on December 11th of 2018. And the incident started here at Wegmans on 601 Amherst Street in the city of Buffalo. The deceased was observed inside the Wegmans by security officials of Wegmans stealing various items. The allegations are that he stole various toiletries, basically. So he was observed inside the Wegmans by security officials employed by Wegmans at approximately 11:40 p.m. on the evening of December 11th, 2018. As security personnel started to walk towards or apprehend or confront the deceased, he took off outside of the front door. There just happened to be a Buffalo police officer, Lieutenant Karen Torello, who was at Wegmans at the time. She is a lieutenant at B District, which covers the downtown Buffalo area. She was in Wegmans getting her dinner for her midnight shift. So she just happened to be there. And as she was leaving Wegmans to go on duty, a security official alerted her and said, "Hey, an individual just took off outside the store here. after we saw him stealing items. Lieutenant Terrell did not see the individual. The security officials from Wegmans gave the lieutenant a description of a tall, thin, possibly African-American male, approximately 30 or 40 years old, who was wearing a dark colored jacket with a backpack under his jacket. That was the description that security gave the lieutenant. The lieutenant told security to call 911 and to put the description out there. The lieutenant also radioed in and said that she was going to basically get herself involved in the situation. At that time, or shortly thereafter, Officer Joseph Melli Jr., M-E-L-I, who also was a B District police officer, heard the radio description go out and heard that his lieutenant, Lieutenant Torello, was involved. And he called her and said, hey, even though this is in D District and he is assigned to B District with her, he called her and said, hey, do you want me to help out? And she said yes. So now there's been a description. It's gone out on 911, where now D District officers are getting involved. Lieutenant Melli and his partner are in a car, again assigned to B District, but they come to the scene. And when I say scene, I mean this entire area. And the description is that the suspect is running on foot northwest in this direction right here. So now we have a situation where officers arrive, again, on the scene. And at some point, someone recognizes a suspect approximately a mile away in the vicinity here of Hurdle and Gladstone in this area right here. So he had gotten all the way to this point right here. Okay. And there's a street called Deer Street here as well. There was also a description that went out there that he's near Deer as well. So Gladstone and Deer are all in the same area here. Again, like I said, approximately a mile away. So now all the officers converge in that area. There is a civilian witness who lives here on Deer Street, which is right there. The civilian witness sees the suspect running through the backyards and sees police officers on foot chasing him through the backyard. And he specifically says that he sees stuff kind of falling out of the suspect. And there were, in fact, some of the toiletry items that he had allegedly taken from Wegmans that were found in the backyards here of Deer Street. The civilian made a specific note to tell us that none of the officers had guns drawn, that all they had were flashlights on going through the backyards here in that vicinity. So at this point in time, none of the police officers involved had weapons out at all. Officer Melli and his partner get to the vicinity here of Deer and Gladstone. And they're in their car, and they park their car there in the vicinity of Deer and Gladstone. And now Officer Melli gets out of his car. And now approximately 15 to 20 minutes have gone by. So now we're getting closer to approximately midnight now, the next day of December 12th, 2018. Again, during this time, various officers have stated that they see him running through Deer. They're chasing him running around this area. They see him, they lose him. They see him, they lose him. There are several officers involved here, Officer Melli being one of them, And at some point, Officer Melly sees him running from Gladstone to Sayre now, which is the next street up here behind Gladstone. And then Officer Melly loses him as well. So again, it's a fluid situation here where they're chasing him, they see him, they lose him, they see him, they lose him, et cetera, et cetera. At some point, someone yells out and says that he's on the roof in the backyard of 50 Gladstone. 50 Gladstone in the backyard of it has a detached roof. And the roof is in the vicinity of where there used to be an above ground pool. If you go right now and you Google 50 Gladstone, the photograph that's on Google right now of 50 Gladstone is taken in 2012. And that 2012 photograph on Google shows a above ground pool in that backyard there. Now that pool is gone now, but you know how they have those stairways and little small platforms that lead up to above ground pools? There's still one of those there now. They didn't take that stairwell down, that little platform down there in the backyard of 50 Gladstone. And that's in the vicinity of this garage, detached garage there in the back. And so someone yells, he's on the roof. And so at this point, two officers, Officers Melly and Officer Hedberg, get up on the roof. And Lieutenant Torello and officer by the name of Hintenberger get on the platform there next to the roof. And then a third officer, Officer McDonald, gets up on the roof on the other side of it. A different method of going up those stairs there. He gets up on the other side of the roof, but again, on the roof. So now you have a situation where you have three officers on the roof. You have two officers who are on the platform there of the above ground pool. It's gone now by the roof. And you have the deceased who is on the roof as well. Now this whole time as they're running and chasing him throughout the neighborhood here, they're yelling for him to stop, stop, and he's not stopping, and he just keeps going and running. And then now they have him on top of the roof. And at this point, none of the three officers have their guns drawn. And the deceased is yelling, he's agitated. They're telling him to, you know, stop, don't go anywhere, stay there, let's get down off the roof here. He then proceeds to put the backpack on the roof, on the ground of the roof. And he then reaches in to his backpack. And the officers are now yelling at him, Officer Melly specifically, show your hands, and he's going in to the backpack. And at this point, Officer Melly now, for the first time, pulls out his gun. At some point, Officer McDonald pulled out his gun too. Officer Hedberg initially did not. And the deceased then pulls out a knife out of his backpack. And the knife is approximately 3.5 inches, the blade, it's a folding knife. It's approximately 3.5 inches long. The handle's approximately 4 1/4 inches long. And he pulls the knife out. And at this point, the officer yelling at him, put the knife down, and he proceeds to start cutting himself on his arm with the knife. And they're saying, stop cutting yourself. put the knife down. It's going back and forth. At one point, the deceased says that I'm not putting a knife down. You're going to have to shoot me. The officer says, no one wants to shoot you here. Please put the knife down. And at this point, the senior officer on the scene, Lieutenant Torello, who was the one at Wegmans, she gives the order to have someone mace him. So Officer Hedberg pulls out his mace and sprays him with mace in the face. And there's snow on the roof. The deceased that now picks up some snow and starts putting snow on his face to wipe the mace off. He then, you know, uses his shirt apparently, or his jacket or some of some form to again wipe his face off. And now he starts walking towards the officers with the knife in hand. And the officers are now backing up. Officer Hedberg now puts the mace away and now pulls his gun out. So all three officers now have their guns drawn as they're backing away up on the roof there, and he's coming at them with a knife. And again, they're yelling, stop. He's yelling. It's a chaotic situation. And the officers basically get to the edge of the roof before they fall off. And it's about the roof's a slanted roof. 10 feet high on one end is the highest and 8 feet on the other. They were on the side though. So they weren't on the 10 foot high part or the 8 foot low part. They were on the side of the roof. So I guess I'll do the logical math here. Approximately 9 feet. So they had a 9 feet drop. The stairwell and the stairs to the above ground pool and that little platform are over to the side there. There's two people standing on that though. The lieutenant and Officer Hindenburg are standing on that. So they have no escape here, okay? And at the next thing that happens is that the deceased, now with the knife in hand, lunges at Officer Melly. And he's a few feet away. And Officer Melly at this point shoots him 3 times. The first shot, well, I can't definitively tell you, just like the last one with Mr. Rivera, the medical examiner can't definitively tell us what the first, second, and third shot is, but logical deduction here, okay, based upon every witness there, all right, is that the first shot went into the side right here. Went into the side right here in the front and came out the other side. The second shot was a little bit lower, same area though, and came out the same area, side to side. And the third shot went into the left buttocks and came out the left, front of the left hip. And that makes sense. If you're lunging at someone, you're gonna lunge and turn like this. So boom, boom, boom. And the witnesses all say that as well. After the three shots, the deceased fell to the roof. The knife dropped out of his hand, and the officers then converged. Lieutenant Torella got Officer Melly out of there right away, got him off the roof. The Officer Hedberg picked the knife up off the roof and gave it to Officer Hindenburg. And the ambulance personnel arrive pretty quick thereafter, because while the suspect was cutting himself with his knife on the roof, Lieutenant Torello had him call 911 and get the ambulance there at that point. And then after the shots, she said, get here quick. And they got there pretty quick. And so they got there and they started treating the deceased. He was, even after three shots, he was still agitated. He was still fighting. He was still yelling. The shots had not knocked him out, quote unquote. They had, I mean, he was still talking, yelling, screaming, and quite frankly, kind of fighting back as they were trying to administer aid to him. At some point, the ambulance arrived, and they put him in the ambulance and took him to ECMC, and he unfortunately passed away approximately 8 hours later at 8:15 a.m., again on December 12th of 2018. What is important to note here are a number of factors. You know, first of all, the deceased, you know, had the fact that he took off from Wegmans is reasonable due to the fact that the security there saw him stealing items from Wegmans. The civilian confirms the officer's stories that no guns were drawn until they got on the roof. So while they were chasing him the whole time, the only thing that was drawn was flashlights. There were numerous orders from the police to tell him to stop multiple times as he was running away. Once he was on the roof, they told him, let's get off the roof, get down off the roof numerous times, and he refused to do that. He started to put his hands in his backpack, and they repeatedly yelled at him to show your hands, show your hands. The autopsy report confirms that there were in fact cuts on his arm. Once the deceased pulled his knife out, Officer Melly yelled at him to put your knife down on numerous occasions, saying, "I don't want to shoot you. I don't want to shoot you." And the deceased stated that you're going to have to shoot me. I think what's the most important here, and what you don't see a lot of times in these police shootings across the country, is, you know, everyone always makes a statement, well, why didn't you try to use non-lethal measures first before you shot? They did that here. They used mace. They tried to use mace right away, a non-lethal measure, before they took lethal action here. I think that's very important, and that's something that I applaud the training the Buffalo police officers for, and I applaud Lieutenant Torello there, who was at the scene, for having the wherewithal to say, hey, let's use mace first here and not shoot first. So this is a classic example. Well, again, unfortunately, it's not an example, because unfortunately we see across the country where officers sometimes shoot first. Here in Buffalo, they're not trained that way, and they didn't do that. They try to use mace first. The most telling part is the fact that, in essence, the deceased, with a knife in hand, lunged at Officer Melly, who was actually in the middle of the two other officers as they were across the roof in a three-way row. The three shots were fired, as I said. The knife was tested for DNA. The major profile of the DNA on the knife was the deceased. There was also one other profile on the knife that was not major. The major was the deceased. That other profile makes sense because one of the two officers actually touched the knife there on the roof. There was a toxicology test done on the deceased. Out of respect for his family, I will not divulge what he tested positive for. I will only say that he did test positive for controlled substances, and the controlled substances that he tested positive for would give me reason to believe or explain his agitation, explain his behavior on the roof. And I will I'll leave it at that, again, out of respect for the family. At the end of the day, this was a a justifiable shooting by Officer Melle. I've come to the conclusion that Officer Melle was acting in self-defense. He was justified in his shots, and therefore Officer Melle is cleared of any wrongdoing by the Erie County District Attorney's Office, and there will be no charges filed against Officer Melle. Questions?
After all this, Captain Rinaldo had said that Marcus Neal had been acting suicidal, that was his words. Mm-hmm. I know you're saying agitated and was yelling. Would you clarify, did you characterize him as being suicidal?
Well, I would say this. I mean, you know, there is, you know, there is a theory out there that we hear in the context of these situations where, you know, it's called suicide by cop, where the individual acts in a certain manner that would lead one to believe that he was trying to get shot by the police. I don't know what was going through Mr. Neal's mind at the time. I don't have any reason to believe, and it would seem logical, quite frankly, that initially, when he's just stealing something from Wegmans, that he was not so distraught that he wanted someone to kill him. Okay, I have no reason to believe that at all. As the situation escalated, and as the police were chasing him, approximately a mile to the scene of the shooting there, once he got on the roof and saw that there were three police officers on the roof, other police officers on the ground, two on the platform, is it possible at that point in his mind that he, could have, said to himself, you know what, I'm just going to give up here and have myself shot? It's possible. I mean, I guess. His words, saying that, you're going to have to shoot me would perhaps indicate that to a certain extent. So I guess a long answer to your question, Jeff, it's feasible, but I personally wouldn't definitively say that. It bears some of the characteristics that you would see under that suicide by cop theory, but without knowing Mr. Neal at all, without being able to obviously I can't read his mind, I wouldn't definitively say that, but it's logical for Captain Rinaldo to say that.
You had referenced the Riviera case, that it took about 7 months for you to come back with your report on that case.
Okay.
This one, about three. What was the difference?
Probably the fact that there's only one civilian witness. All the witnesses here, people involved were Buffalo police officers who we had at our disposal right away. The Rivera matter had a bunch of civilian witnesses, if you recall. There were numerous members of his family and friends of his that were involved, who were a little more difficult to get a hold of and to get to cooperate with us, quite frankly. So I guess it would just be the nature of who the people we had to talk to were and the availability of those people.
Do you think a taser would have helped here, or would they just have put themselves in harm's way with him having a knife?
Yeah, again, unless the taser would have knocked him down right away, okay? That would have helped but we're assuming the taser would have worked, okay? Work in the sense that would have, bam, knocked him out right away, or at least halted him right away, or at least contained such a jolt where he would have dropped the knife. That's speculative, though. The mace did not slow him down at all, quite frankly. I mean, it slowed him down in the sense that he had to wipe his eyes. For him, he was able to put snow on his eyes right away, and get water on there and wipe it off. But tasers don't 100% work all the time, and actually knock him out, knock you out. So, again, The fact that the officers here, you know, tried to use non-lethal measures, that to me speaks volumes of their professionalism and conduct here.
Were the relatives disappointed to hear? What can you say about their reaction?
Yeah, I mean, again, I mean, you can talk to Don afterward to clarify that more. I mean, but I talking to my people, the sense that they got was just, you know, they were just sad. You know, there's obviously they've lost their loved one here. The father lost his son, and you know, whenever you lose your son, you know, you're just sad. I don't want to characterize them any further. But I mean, I got the impression from my people that, you know, they understood, they appreciated the time that we gave them and talked to him about it and laid it all for him, and they were, the father is sad he lost his son, and I'm sad too. I'm sad for him as well. It's I don't want to see anyone lose their life ever, but. You know, being a police officer is a dangerous job, and you know, I mean, you know, I think that a lot of times we lose the fact of that in these police shootings, and you know, it's an error. I'm not sitting here saying that the police are right in all cases, because obviously across the country we've seen that they're not right all the time, but in this case here they were 100% right and 100% justified, but it just goes to show that police duty is dangerous. Police duty, when a police officer leaves his home at 11:30 at night to go on duty on the midnight shift, you know, his family does not know whether they're coming back that night, that next morning. And, you know, it's a dangerous job, and these things occur, but, you know, unfortunately here someone lost his life, and again, as a father is, not nearly as much as the father is, obviously, you know, I'm sad too.
Some people have asked about the, you know, it starts with shoplifting and ends up with the guy
getting
shot by
police.
Is there anything about how the police, was it normal for this kind of response?
Yes. I mean, Aaron, there are, you go over to Buffalo City Court today and there are probably three or four petty larceny cases that are going on in city court right now. I mean, you go in a year, there's hundreds and hundreds of petty larceny, small time grand larceny cases that are going on across the city each and every day. And for a lot of those, there's a police chase involved that, you know, you never hear about. I think what's important here is that we don't focus on the initial, you know, we don't focus on what happened here. We focus on what happened here. Now, it's part of the same narrative. I get that, okay? It's part of the same narrative. It's part of the totality of the circumstances. It's the same story. I recognize that. But, you know, police officers, when a crime occurs, they have to pursuit. You know, we as a society can't have it where police officers are going to say to themselves, well, you know what, it's just a petty larceny. He took some shampoo, some toiletries, you know, from Wegmans. Who cares? Let him go. All right, let him go. Where do you draw the line there? You know, you got a bar fight. You got two kids in a bar fight, you know, and one kid gets punched, you know, and gets a black eye, and the other kid takes off. The cops are there, you know, do the cops let that kid go and say, you know, it's just two college kids fighting in a bar, you know? I mean, you can't do that. There's no line to draw there. The police have to do their job, and they have to pursue individuals who commit crimes. Wegmans wants their stuff back. Wegmans doesn't want people stealing their stores. Now, again, to play devil's advocate, you could say, well, you know, Wegmans is a $1 million business. You know, what do they care about a little shampoo? Who cares? You know, if the mom and pop store at the corner hurdle here in Military, you know, it's a small convenience store. Well, you know, that person doesn't make as much as Wegmans. So we'll chase that person out of that convenience store, but we're not going to chase Wegmans. I mean, you can't do that either, you know. So you gotta have a standard rules of society to keep order in society, and you got to make pursuits. But you know, do I agree that, you know, it seems a little much to have 10 police officers surrounding someone a mile away for stealing some shampoo or Wegmans. I'll concede that to a certain extent. But that's really not what I got to focus on. I got to focus on not the conduct here, but the conduct here. And the conduct there was a police officer, his life was in jeopardy. A individual was lunging at him with a knife, and he was justified in using the action that he did. That's really my laser focus, and not what happened here.
Have the officers said, other than Melly, have you have other officers said why they didn't shoot and why Melly was the only one to shoot?
No, quite frankly, I didn't ask that question, quite frankly. The reason, though, was just kind of logical. The individual lunged at Melly, and Melly had his gun drawn, and Melly just shot first.
But there was another officer out of
it. There was two.
Two, yeah.
So
why didn't the other officer?
I guess the logical answer is because the knife was being lunged at the one who shot him.
And another question.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
So I wonder whether did that officer approach Neil to administer the mace and then back away? How did that?
Specifically, I don't know. All I know is that the Lieutenant Torello, who was on the platform, said mace him, and Hedberg then went and maced. Hedberg said he was a few feet away from him, so. Whether or not he went to him or he came to him, I don't know. I can suspect, though, that Hedberg probably went at him more so, or they kind of met in the middle. But I don't definitively have an actual feet by feet, yard by yard, blow by blow on the roof of that.
Was there any evidence of the deceased having suicidal thoughts in the past? Because it seems to me like the cutting would be pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of. Yeah.
Was it the right move for the police officer to touch the knife afterwards?
Probably not. Yeah.
John, only one civilian witness?
Yes.
And the fact that the investigation depends so much on police testimony.
Yes. Yes.
Is that problematic?
Well, no, because one, I have no reason to believe that the police aren't telling the truth. That's number one. Number two, the stories and the statements of all the police officers are incredibly consistent. And three, there was only one civilian involved here, so. You know, I'm dealt the hand I'm dealt here, quite frankly. You know, and the hand I'm dealt is that there were several police officers and only one civilian. The civilian, though, did provide some key information for me to back up what the officers were saying. Obviously, the civilian backed up the fact that the deceased did, in fact, steal some stuff from Wegmans, and the stuff was found in the backyard of Deer Street where the civilian witness lived. The civilian witness did back up the fact that he was running through the backyards of Deer Street, as the officer said. The civilian witness did back up that the officers did not have any guns drawn at that time, that it was just flashlights going through the backyards. So those were all pieces of information that I got from the civilian witness that lended credibility to the officer's story, and therefore now gives me no reason to pause.
Is there any surveillance video?
Yeah, no, sir. Just only surveillance is the video inside the Wegmans of him stealing.
And is he an officer?
No, but not really, no. Young officer, been on the force about a year.
Okay.
Not long at all. A little over a year. Been in the force. A fine police officer. Everyone I talked to, a fine young man who was placed in a very stressful situation here, and was in a position where he had no choice but to shoot. I mean, he was either going to get stabbed or fall off the roof. I feel bad for the deceased, but this is a traumatic situation for an officer. Anytime a police officer is involved in a shooting, that was a traumatic day in Officer Melly's life that he will never forget. And he's a professional though, and he's a member of the finest police force in this country, and he will march on.
And expected to come back to work when?
I have to talk to BPD, but as far as I'm concerned, he's free and clear.
So
not that I'm aware of.
Prior to this.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.